Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about what is a nucleus really like? This is the nucleus inside an atom, inside of all the matter that you've got around yourself are made out of atoms. I'm just going to go into it. It reminds me of a story of me talking to a student saying, atoms are in this, are in that, in this pencil, in this piece of chalk, in this blackboard. I suppose there was the blackboard there. And it's in you. And he said, all right, but they're not in me. Definitely not me. I can accept anything else, but I'm not made of atoms. So it's important to know what atoms are made out of. And I'm in this quest in terms of that I've developed these things which display advanced mathematics. And the actual bridge to that is all burnt. People have come up and come up with these fuddy-duddy ideas which I have to fix up. And I'm just getting into looking at the atom. And one of the things is that there is this view, and I've got to go through the view of what people show you in school, and it's a very succulent, colourful, juicy, you know, lots and lots of stuff going on. It's sort of like, and it's an overreal one. It is reality plus additional features that they've added in, courtesy over nature, to make it more teachable. So their picture of what's inside a nucleus doesn't correspond to nature. It's something else. It's something other than what is real. So it's fake news, basically fake news, and it is basically conspiracy theory of so easy to explain. So as one would be aware, conspiracy theories are ripe. It's so much easier to come up with a simple explanation which avoids any sort of heavy mathematics. Now, to do this, I've been going in on many paths, going to a path, coming back again, going to path, building some electronic system demonstrations, going back, writing some papers, learning how to do that, coming back, going into a general structure of coming up with ideas, pulling back and realizing that there's these structures, hyperstructures, which I need above my other structures, explanation structures, to come through. One of the hyperstructures is this idea of scales and working on this whole scale area. So if you can imagine, scale is the fundamental thing in science. I can talk about the universe, I can talk about a germ. To do it, I have to teach scales, and I have this sort of enormous book, it's a massive mainframe of scales. So for anything I want to talk of, if I want to talk of a planet, I have a scale which I can see the map of the planet, or if I want to talk about a hill, I have the hill, it's a fantastically variable thing. But it leads to something where people almost don't understand. It's so commonplace, people don't understand it, and it's not clarified. So and given that you dip in these different times, if you don't have a clear scale and you've got different explanations operating at different scales, they're not going to slot together. Does that make sense? So if you decide to prefabricate explanations, that is, have fragments of explanations which can be mixed and matched and upgraded, if they're of different scales, they're not going to fit together. You've got to have a universal scale. And so a universal scale means it's got to work for that area, but then for all other areas. And so what I've done is I've tripped on the ideal scales, and this is not from the big American boulder NIST or anything like that. This is not from a group of Frenchmen in Europe, in the European Union, saying, you know, the metric system. This is just, if you'd like, doing a highlighter pen through this whole list of scales. I'm going to take that one, that one, and that one. So it's the official letter scales, but I'm only going to pick four of them. And those four are equally spaced, and they'll do most things. So so I'm going to talk about these four scales. There's the zeroth scale, there's plus one, plus two, and minus one. The minus one is the scale to get down to the atom, but we'll talk about that. So the zeroth scale, the scale of me, is the one-to-one scale. And as I've said before, it's a scale that you live in, and it's the scale you open up your pencil case and look inside, and there's pencils, rubbers, and a bit of a, you know, what's that there, and something you've stolen, but it's all there, and it's all the scale. It doesn't, and if there's something, it just reminds me of this story. Once, I'll just give a scale story. Back in the day when the freeway from our place up in Glenbrook to Sydney was smaller, it was possible to, well, and people at a certain time in the early morning when tradies were wanting to go on this road, it would transform into a much more ferocious, violent road. There's a scale story in this, and I wouldn't break the speed limit, whatever. And so if someone was travelling at, say, it was someone's travelling at 95 and the speed limit was 100, I'd go only up to 100 to overtake them. That would mean that I would block the traffic forever, overtaking them, always sticking to the speed limit. Of course, this motorcycle was behind me going either side, going across. And I went across and he took over and I said, "Oh, look, you'll probably come up against a traffic jam." I would have stayed much more calm. Thank you very much. Then there was a huge traffic jam a short way up. Fair way up. And as I drove past, and he just became conscious, and he got off his motorcycle, which he had crashed, ready to beat the living daylights out of the car who'd stopped to help him. And, you know, he was an angry person. I was thinking, oh, thank goodness, there is a story for it. So years later, I was doing this same similar thing. This is before... I don't know if anyone remembers the old toll roads where people actually sat in toll booths and took money and all that type of stuff. Remember money, where you actually had coins and pieces of paper and stuff like that. But what's going on? And I was aware, again, I could see this person and this person coming up. And this four-wheel drive, you could see for a long way back, and it was bullying all the cars and pushing its way forward, and the cars were going, and I dutifully was bullied aside, and he went past it, and it was the same bloke, but he was in a four-wheel drive, the biggest four-wheel drive I've ever seen. It was 50% larger than a normal four-wheel drive, and so I've just never seen any car like it before. It's just one of those things. So we have the moral of that story is that we're very finely tuned to our one-to-one world. We can see if anything's slightly bigger. I think this is to do with food. We want to check if we've got the same size of food. The scale thing always gets me at McDonald's. You see the huge Big Mac, and then they serve it to you and go, your scale, sense of scale, this is 80% smaller than I could have possibly imagined. And yeah, it just barely is barely enough for a price which is just a little bit much. So you've got your sense of scale there. The next scale up is the one to a trillion. A trillion, that's four sets of millions, four sets of thousands. So a million, a trillion scale. The sun is shrunk. The sun is a million kilometers away, right? Aside, so it's a million meters aside. So it's a million thousand meters aside. So a thousandth of a meter is a millimeter. So the sun corresponds at a trillion scale to a little spherical ball bearing. And at that scale, you get a sense of the whole galaxy, because your nearest town is generally about 40 kilometers away, something like that. Not here, it's a substantial scenic route through the Blue Mountains to get up there. And 40 kilometers away, a tiny speck of dust, sort of like a piece of rubbish you dig out of your teeth and put on a tissue or something like that. That size of stuff is Proxima Centauri. The rest of the space is empty space, so you sort of get to, it's sort of like a real feeling of nothingness going up to the higher ratios there. And then for the whole galaxy, whole Milky Way, if you held it out and to scale and pushed it out into space, out to where the sun was, it would be the actual width of the sun. So it's a million kilometers wide, would be your model of your galaxy at this level. Your next level up is the so that would be terameters, and then one petameter is a kilometer. Now the next thing is 10 to the 24, or yotta is 8, so that's 8 thousandths. And the universe is roughly 800 yotta meters side to side. It's a little bit confusing. There's lots of confusing stuff here. And if you felt that scale one, scale plus one is boring, scale plus two is mind-boggling, but also boring. It is literally the inside of a ping-pong ball. And it's with all of time, all the history in it. In fact, you look into the past, and if you look, eventually you can look deeply into the black and tune up the black, and you can see the first instance of time, sort of almost, so there's a bang, and then you and you look up, and it's that afterglow, 40,000 years after the Big Bang, almost a flash. It's almost like when you see a flash and you blink your eyes and you can see the afterglow, the old magnesium filings in a glass tube. A little spark would go through that and go through all that. And so that's your yottometers, terameters, from terabytes. That's a million million. Yotta is a million 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 meters. There you go. It's 8, and a million is 2,000. So that's, if I want to go, it's 1,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000, And there's the conversion of one yottometer equals 1 meter, so that's 800 meters. So 800 meters is sort of a block, you know, a blockish city block going around there. It depends where you are. Go around, so let's go the opposite direction. Minus one, it gets a lot more interesting because there's a lot more, well, in general, you're in a place where there's a lot of matter, and that gets you down to a picometer and a hydrogen atom is 52 picometers radius. So it's 52 meter radius is the size of your hydrogen atom. And it's here that people would come out of the lab and say, gee, I really don't know. What are we going to teach the kiddies? I don't think you should I'm going to teach them that. And they've taught the kiddies stuff, which is just appalling. Now, the and this is what we've got to go through. This is not a fight I've picked. This is a fight that teachers and stupid people, or you can say bone stupid people, arrogant. I think it's a combination of stupidity and arrogance has led to it. So what we're going to do is we're going to forget the 50. We're going to shrink down, or not shrink down, we're going to blow up. We're going to have our model blow up around us. All this, we sit here, you're in the comfort of your own head, and these models do things. The zero model does one, the plus one shrinks it, and so you can suddenly see the sun as a small little glowing biz, and then you shrink it again, and you can suddenly see the edge of the universe a lot closer. And then the other one, the minus one, blows it up such that a hydrogen atom is now 50, the edge of it is 52 meters, and edge is, unfortunately, I'm stuck with all these words and descriptive things which are from basic, I can't describe how stupid these people are. Just how, look, I must admit, I don't respect them anymore in terms of at what stage would you intervene with someone. I think the thing really is egotism. They say, oh gosh, you're great. What you're saying is this, and the person has just written a great thing about you, and then they write something stupid, and you say, oh no, can I cancel that? They're just a bit lazy. So the idea is, imagine some, I'm not going to deal with the electron at the moment, I'm going to deal with the nucleus. Imagine that the edge of, you're in a hydrogen atom, and the edge is 52 meters away. And the size of the proton, which is in the center, so we understand this, that there's a proton and an electron make up a hydrogen atom. And this hydrogen atom, remarkably, is one model, is going to actually have some bulk and some guts and some personality. On the other one, it possibly can't have it, but it's very teachable. And if you don't like it, you get shouted at and put to the naughty corner. So we're going to do that. We're going to do the naughty corner version. Naughty corner version still has the electron. Both the quantum version and the naughty corner version both have the electron and the proton. The electron's a fundamental particle. The proton in the naughty corner is treated as a fundamental particle, but in quantum physics, it's not. It's a composite particle. So we'll take, there's an electron and a proton each. Now, the proton is 0.8 femtometers radius. Now, a femtometer is a thousandth of a picometer. It's picometer, femtometer, a thousandth. And so that means that this is a millimeter. The proton's a bit, less than two, about the same size as the sun. You can imagine in your stuff. Now, I'm going to allow you to do heaps of things in the naughty quarter because they've allowed it. And they've allowed it because it feels good, because I can teach it, and I can go out and I can go, I've taught my kitty this. And so, in the naughty quarter, you can imagine that as a solid ball bearing. And for the nature of things, I think you can colour a slight tinge of pink. You can have colour, and you can even inscribe a little glow-in-the-dark P on it and float, and that's your proton. That's nice and solid. And they've said it's got the correct thing, it's got the charge, it's got an experimentally agreed radius. Now, if we're going to have to come back onto that, because we're going to add protons and neutrons and build something up. So in the naughty corner, it's not in the naughty corner, you're in the naughty corner, and you're going to stay there until you can recite what's here. Otherwise, you're not going to get out. So you're going to have to, the naughty quarter is a threat to you. I'm threatening you that if you don't recite what I tell you exactly, you are going to fail. And if you try and tell me more advanced physics, I'm going to just put my hands over my ears and go, I'm going to cancel you out, and then I will undermine you, and I will I'll let down your tires. I'll burn your family home. I'll just the standard stuff you do in religious things to get people to believe a religious belief that they eventually are converted to. I'll torture you. So you've got your proton. Now let's build up to a deuterium. Now in the naughty corner, you can add an extra neutron to that. So a proton, a neutron is another fundamental particle in the naughty corner. In quantum mechanics, it's a different combination of quarks. It's got actual different subcomponents in it, and it's not a fundamental particle. But in the naughty corner, it's a fundamental particle, and it's a ball bearing, also a ball bearing. Let's give it a bit of a blue hue. An N, right at N, and it's physically that size, so we can actually physically measure it, and it sticks together. It sticks. Now the two ball bearings stick together, and they want to stick together, but it's the strong forces really pulling them together, really hard. They don't crush or distort because it's the naughty corner, because their circles are drawn on blackboard, so they're really pushing together, but they don't crush together or do anything. But you could land on the surface of one because they've got a hard surface. Being a surprise when you come to throw it. I don't know at what point you're going to object to it. And they are fundamental particles, but in this model, expanded model, you can write the P and N. So they're fundamental, but I can get even more fundamental ink and write on it a P. And even more fundamental ink and what I'm in, and fundamentally change it. And then I can deuterium, tritium, helium. I can build helium. Helium is these four ball bearings, and they don't crush, but they're held together really tightly, like strong magnets. But they're held together really strongly, but they don't crush in into a ball, because they're strong, but somehow stronger still. The strong force is there, like real glue pushing it together in a press. You imagine a hydraulic press pushing them together really strongly together. We know it's strong because we try and pull them apart. You can't pull them apart, can you? So they're really strong together. But the hydraulic press is really pushing them together, but they're much stronger still. And the little, if you can sense a sense of ridiculousness going through, and so this is called the Bohr, the world's dumbest Danish person I've ever come across. Bohr liquid drop model, 1936, lasted a month in 1936 before it was just, oh my god, go show it to a school, and oh my god, 100 years later people are still teaching this rubbish. So you got this drop, and then if you've got uranium-235, that's 235 ball bearings in a cluster, and it's great. It's there, and they're all hard ball bearings, and they can't crush. They're crushing inwards. You've got the strong force pulling them in, and you would expect, therefore, that you take the cube root of 235 to get the radius of it, you know, like that's your fundamental volume. Let's see, 4 cubed is 65, 5, it's somewhere about, it'll be 5 ball bearings radius. You know, 5 cubed is 125, 6 cubed is 36 times 6. I think it's roughly 6 cubed. It'll be 6 balls. Is my brain gone? I used to know that right on. And of course, uranium doesn't have that radius. In fact, none of the radiuses, atomic radiuses, correspond to this ball model whatsoever. What do I do? That's not a relevant question. Get out. Get out of my class. I'm going to write to your mum. I'll do whatever it is necessary. Because that's the way I've been taught. That is, when someone questions me about something, about how come this ball doesn't crush, how I can write on something fundamentally more, how can it be? And what's more is that if you are are thinking, what am I building? I'm building something where the neutrons and protons could be interchanged and create different energies. I could create heaps of different energy levels that would be like a Rubik's Cube, with, as the solution got closer, it got to a higher energy. It could be like that. Well, my answer to you is that this is the correct model, and the fact that you don't understand it. So does that make it understand? You've got a nucleus, a liquid drop nucleus, and you're dropping these little hard spheres in. Can you sense that? I think this is ridiculous. I didn't think it was ridiculous when I was taught it. I wrote it in the exams as everything. Like, I didn't really give a toss. My life was going down to the corner store on my push bike and getting a Chico roll and various things like that, putting coins in the not that I ever did. Oh, I think I occasionally put coins in the pinball machine and stuff like that. I really wasn't too concerned about it one way or the other. But the problem with this big glob of little balls is, A, it doesn't form a good sphere. The sphere can form different shapes and energy. So imagine all this force and why it goes all together. And if I interchange a proton and a neutron in different places in there, it's like a Rubik's Cube, I could get whole lot of different energy levels in it. And how a neutron goes into it, and how come it just blobs apart into these two. Yeah, this is fission, because that's fission. You make a nuclear bomb by making up uranium. Now, of course, what I used to do with this is teach with brown chocolate, white chocolate drills, and these people would make up the different elements, and I would then get people to make up a uranium, and the king and queen of the periodic table have a little periodic table that put its crowns, and then they would put one more neutron and break in two, and they could divide the two between them and then give them out amongst their friends and all that type of stuff. So I used to have activities associated with it. So this is the world, the make-believe world of the ball drop. This is where a neutron and proton all have a radius, a hard sphere, circle ball with a radius of 1.3 millimeters in femtometers, and that expanding the scale, magnifying everything by a factor of a trillion, you get to the femto scale, and that's if you magnified a proton, it would be like that. Okay, so put that aside, and if you feel that you're a bully and you want to lie to kids, you perhaps shouldn't listen to the next part of this podcast. Your calling is to be a classroom teacher and to continue the lie. Goodbye to all you people, to everybody else. Let's talk about quantum physics. Quantum physics still starts off with a proton. We don't call it a fundamental particle because it's not. It's got quarks and it's got two up and a down quark, you know. And it's a quantum particle. So it doesn't have a surface. It's not hard. It doesn't have a surface, an inside or an outside. In fact, the electron, which is also a wave, goes right through it, and it goes through the electron. It's there, it's beautiful, it's there. It doesn't have a surface. It's not going to hold back anything. You can't land on it. It's a surface. That 1.8 millimeters, is that's the radius, the diameter at which is as much outside as inside, and you just only get more and more and more until you get to the center, and then there's less and less and less. It goes off. It doesn't go, the actual wave function extends to infinity, yeah, it all extends to infinity, but its potential has got a very sharp wall to it. It's a It's due to a colour force. It's a short range, massively strong force. So that's your proton. So you, and now there's a few things you can't do to it. It's got a charge on it, but you can't write the letter P on it, because that's the dumb school one. This one is a genuine. We've just expanded it, and you can see, hear the ice cream truck coming around at the moment. It's like a plague. I don't think anyone will go out to this poor ice cream truck. I wonder if people will go out to it. I don't know. Okay, so your proton there. Now, you've expanded it up. There's a few things about your proton. Your proton has got a mass. It doesn't have a surface. So you can't write a P because there is nothing. You could write a P on an artificial model, but this is a genuine proton which expanded. You can't write a P on it, but simply because there's nothing smaller. There's not, no, you could possibly place a few super heavy particles there in the shape of a P, but it would have nothing to do with the proton. The proton would ignore it because it's in a different space. You can't hold it. It's at surface. Now, the other thing is that it is completely rotationally symmetric. It's got a Lie symmetry of SU2 symmetry. That means that it is completely symmetric in our universe. Unlike a, let's say, I suppose, circle, a disc, a plate with no markings on it would be SU1 symmetry. It's got, you can rotate it once around like that, which is but you've got a model which really isn't to represent it. This what we've got is really there, because you could actually put a marking on that and you could conceive that it goes around there, but it's not symmetric once you put the marking on it. It's a hard thing to get. Now, the problem is, because we're dealing with nature, this is not rotatable. You cannot rotate a proton. Right? It's not that you can't. The spinning doesn't mean anything because it doesn't have a feature to mark on it to indicate that it's spun. It's got SU2 symmetry from a whole series of other mathematics aspects of it. That is, it's rotationally, it's 720 degrees. You have to walk around it twice till it's the same thing. Now, it's got a charge there. It's sitting there. Now, it does have a, if you held a small magnetometer, a compass measure, you'd be able to measure a north pole on it, and you'd possibly be able to measure a north pole spinning around. However, that's in theory in the model. In the actual one, you can't do it, because if you could measure the needle moving back and forth as the pole spun around, you could hook that needle up to a power source, right, and drive, get power out of it. So there's things, but it is, and it also has the property, although it physically isn't in our universe sufficiently. I say in our universe, it's obviously in our universe, but in your scale zero universe, where everything's nice and thick, and I throw a rock at someone, it hurts, and I throw a frisbee and it hurts, and mostly things can hurt you there. This is a fundamental, or it's not a fundamental particle. We'll talk about that in a short while, but it has it's got three components which are in their ground state very thoroughly, and it's built up its component, and those individual components have spin associated with it, and one could say inside it, even though it is completely, oh god, I'm being eaten by a mosquito here, it's just eating me, gorge. Even though it's got three quarks in it, and the quarks have got, if you wait for it, it weighs 1,820 electrons. That's how much it weighs. It's a big beast, and it's really small. But it's got three quarks in it, and that three quarks at most weighs 1%. The actual, if you could take the quark separately and put them on scales, they only weigh 18 units, 18 electrons. But you put the three together, and they are bound so strongly by the strong force, the energy is such that E equals MC squared. The gluons, vertex energy, vertex mass is such that that produces a soup of energy in it. Although it is a mistake to think that the gluons and the quarks take up a volume in our universe. They are folds, are conceptual folds of energy in space in our universe. They physically manifest it, but that they're not somehow. It's not like a skin on a peach. It's very fuzzy, and somehow they're inside that peach. They're just not there in terms of. You give it to a child and put the hand through it, they put the hand right through it. There is physically nothing to feel because it's the when we refer to quarks, we're referring to a fold in space, and there's nothing there to rotate. There is something physically there in terms of it. It's got a rotation. These quarks are rotating. A few are rotating pointing up, two are rotating pointing up, one is rotating pointing down. It gives the overall spin, angular momentum spin. This is a few questions I've got. Of the proton, a composite particle, spin half. But because these spins are complex, it's got a current spin. Due to current moving in a circle, even though it doesn't have, it's not spinning, it's got a current in it, and this is a current outside the dimensions of our universe. This is hard, so you can imagine, obviously, let's not tell the kids about this, is adult stuff. It's got, each of those quarks have got a current, and they have a quark magnetic moment. But that magnetic moment adds up in a complex way to give the general magnetic moment to it. So you've got something, a really complex object producing a magnet, which points up or down. And you can actually, that magnet moment aligns to the original magnetic field that it was made at. And that magnetic field is never broken, and it's always oriented itself to that field, and it's taken energy and momentum to orient it. In fact, your magnetic field can actually cause things to rock, and this is one of the things. This is where I came into the start of it, where I've said, brain damage, what do I do? I'll go and learn electronics, and it's all confusing. If I understand this, I'm going to have to work out everything else. It's all a challenge. So this is true that you can actually tame one of these protons and move them around, but it is spinning, and it takes angular momentum and oomph to actually orient one of these things. This is the experiment I've shown. So. Going for the experiment I've shown, this is something in this area, obviously not fit for the kiddie program, the kiddie fake. I feel it's almost like stealing candy from children, that what's happening. I always imagine it off to the left now. So I have a proton. It doesn't have a surface. It's not rotating, but it does have spin. It has things inside. It's got a magnetic field, and it can actually reorient with respect to that magnetic field and point itself downwards, and that is a state. It can have a proton can have an excited state. Its excited state is its spin pointing against the magnetic field. So I can have a proton, and it can have two energy levels. It can point with or against the magnetic field. Its spin associated, but it doesn't have any spinning objects in it. And so it doesn't have any mechanism inside it. So although it's not a fundamental particle, it does have fundamental properties. And fundamental, the word fundamental means, you can't understand it. You woeful person of scale 0, 3 dimensions, you cannot understand it. The only way you will ever understand it, get close to it, is seeing some of the maths and seeing the shadow of the maths, the symmetries of the maths, and the symmetry of the real thing. This is the beautiful, beautiful thing. You see real experimental results. You see math, which you cannot, no one can understand a complex number or a quaterion, which is a more complex number. There's a complex number and a doubly and triply complex number. A triply complex number has real plus I plus J plus K. It's got these beautiful stuff. Part of lost mathematics. It's always good reading old maths. And the fact that these people understood it and were expert in it is just absolutely astounding. So our proton's more that now. Your proton has no surface. It has the electron wave going through. The proton and the electron mix. You can't land on it. You can't. Not the idea of the electron can't crash land on it. The electron has already crash landed. In fact, a hydrogen is a electron which has crash landed through a proton. It hasn't landed at a proton. The electron's gone through the proton. You've got a normal proton, and it's mind its own business. Crap. I've got an electron that's just landed through me, and now my positive field is going too much, but eventually my positive field is going through it, and eventually it's been cancelled at a certain distance out. You can't feel my positive field any further. That's sort of interesting to actually do some of the calculations associated with that. But it's also got its angular momentum, so I still take a certain amount of energy to move apart, to move around, and I am unfundamental in terms of that. I have, my spin can be up or down, or it's got a fundamental angular momentum in it. A lot more complicated than just a little ball bearing, which is uncrushable. Here, it's completely the opposite of crushable. So if you can imagine something hard, this is a complete fluff, complete cloud. It is indeed, kiddies, a wave function. Now, these particles can actually, your two ups and a down, two thirds, plus two thirds, minus a third, giving you a charge of one, they can actually be going up to excited state. You can hit the little proton so bejesusly hard that it will go up to an excited state, and then it can radiate light. The proton in itself can go to the delta plus state. You can add different quarks in it and stuff like that, but if you kept the same quarks and you can actually really bully them and get them to go to the same state, and they'll radiate down. So it's not a single one. Now, the neutron, same deal. Now its charges add up to zero, so it's got no charge, but its magnetic field. A proton and a neutron both have magnetic field. back over to the left tell your kiddies a story and turn really nasty on them if they ask any questions. Your neutrons on protons don't have magnetic fields. These ones have intrinsic magnetic fields because they've got rotation of charge in a universe that we can't, well, it's our universe, but it's an aspect of the universe that we can't imagine. And we can't imagine with the mathematics taught at school, I think, that, and as of yet, I can know that I can't draw it with a little mark on it, so I break the symmetry of it. The moment I draw a P on my proton, I've broken the symmetry. It's not a proton anymore. It can be rotated, and it's got a rotational. The moment I mark something, it's no longer. The P can go through a 2-degree angle, and the proton is symmetric under rotation of 2 degrees. It's continuously symmetric. It's got nothing, no marking on it. How do I do that? Now, a neutron is also fluffy. It's also got a magnetic field, and it will sit right through the proton because it's, why not? It does not have the dancing nautically one. They've got a distance to it. A deuterium has almost the same nuclear diameter because it's actually fallen through each other. It's the neutron and the proton sit at the same point in space. They've got different quantum numbers. They can sit in the same point. They're fermions, so they can sit. If they've got different quantum numbers, if they were bosons, they could all have the same quantum number. But fermions have got a different quantum number. They sit in the same space. And so the next proton, so the next neutron. A helium in the dunce stupid quantum is very easy teachable because the person can see there, and it's half written for them and half the diagram. The diagram's halfway between the language, and so they can give the answer very quickly. There's two neutrons and two protons. If I show in reality what it looks there, it just looks like a fluffy blob. And I have to write to it and say, look, that fluffy blob has two neutrons and two protons. Someone looking at that could easily mistake it for something else because it is actually something else. Someone could say, well, it's when I show that fluffy blob flying off here, it's just a fluffy blob. I can't tell it's helium. So the naughty corner version is excellent for teaching, for the demonstration. It's almost like a crime scene where you've got the villain marked V and red, and you can see the villain enter the shop and move out. You can see what's going on. It's a lot harder to see what's going on in there, but it makes for helium a beautiful atom with the protons and the neutrons all on top of each other. Now, which I found rather interesting, if you make helium-5, it's unstable. Its neutron, the next neutron in, can't sit on because it's already a spin-up, spin-down neutron. You have to actually have spin-up. So what you are, if you've got hydrogen atom and spectra, you've got the hydrogen or the nuclear potential with spectrum, and for God's sake, radiation things emit nuclear radiation, which is read by spectrograph. How's that going to work? You're not going to get your ball of clanky ball, marble ball of marbles to crack and magically. Essentially, they do. It's interesting that there is this claim, as if by magic, the electron moves a different distance from one radius to the other, and as if by magic, this happens. And as if this one here is the magic is there. The magic is in the mathematics, in the higher symmetry. So helium 5, which is two protons and three neutrons, the other neutron has to be a P shell. Is it P or no? I think it would be a 2s. I think it would be a 2s. Similar to lithium, it's got to go up, and it's at a higher energy, and it's at a higher energy such that it's no longer wanted, and it can actually fire off, and it fires off a high speed neutron. Pretty amazing. And you know, I find this hard to understand, how a nuclear particle breaks down in the intermediate stuff and distorts your potential, distorts and fires it, fires the neutron off. So a neutron is not charged, but it is the energy of the helium crushing or condensing it more, fires this high speed neutron off, and a gamma ray. And this is important because this is the fusion of your tokamak reactor going across, and this high speed neutron then gets absorbed by lithium, which then splatters and breaks apart into more fuel for the reactor. So your lithium blanket produces here, and the radiation goes off, hits a water blanket, heats up the steam turbine, and gives you limitless free energy for the human race. So it's important to know. So let's summarize here. So my entrance into this is having no friends, no one to speak to, no enough maths, and saying, a bit of a shattered brain, let's build these quantum oscillators. So I build the quantum oscillator, and then what the heck, I've got to build social robots to explain it. Oh, then I have to deconstruct languages, explanations such that they can fit together and out-compete the Punch and Judy show, hey kiddies, to do it. Then I've got to do that, I've got to go up a level and organize structures and focus in, so the scale structure, go down to a fixed scale. Then once I'm down on a fixed scale, start to explain or have a go through explaining what's going on. So on your one side you have what you're taught at school, which are these hard little spheres, and on the other side you've got the actual majesty of quantum physics, where the actual magic is, it's sort of still magical, but it's one step beyond. It's a magic that is beyond your understanding. It is magical because it is appeals to fundamental stuff. So a fundamental, something which is, an electron has a fundamental spin and charge, because it is beyond explanation. It is a property, an explanation lies in the way that the space is folded to make the thing. It's what you have borrowed from space to make the particle. And it is as if that fundamental property is without explanation, but it's been borrowed from the universe and added to that particle, and now sits, in accounting wise, with that particle, but has no explanation. It's sort of like it's inherited it from the universe. So it's a proton has inherited its spin. Well, it's got quarks, and those quarks have inherited their charge and spin added up, and that's your fundamental aspect of it. But your proton doesn't have additional properties that you add to it to make it easy to explain to a kid. It doesn't have it. And when it doesn't have it, it means it's now free to do other things. It's sort of like racing something in a cult, in a family, and it's got things that it believes and does, and it's very limited what it can do. It's now free to take on a neutron, two neutrons and a proton, another proton together in the inners, and it's free to do that, and it's got a story for. There is actually no real story besides. Well, those hard spheres. There's some force attracting those hard spheres together. And those hard spheres aren't collapsing under the enormous force because they must be bloody hard spheres, mustn't they? If they're not crushing in, of course, that's not necessary. If someone asks those questions, the result has been, has always been, I will ridicule you. I'll make you feel stupid. I'll do everything to reinforce you never wanting to ask that question again. If you do ask the question, you do get this beautiful stuff, and the stuff doesn't rotate. Like, say if I've got a helium atom, I can see that rotating, a helium nucleus. I can see that rotating. You can't see it rotating there. You can't have spin flipping of a helium inside there. You can't have, but you can have it there, or a spin, a whole nucleus. You can't have that there, but the entire thing can happen. You can't have the two things. So I hope I've explained that well, and that's taken 56 minutes to just talk on that. So I hope that's food for thought if you've bothered to listen through all of this. Thanks a lot for listening. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.